Good morning. The music is not part of the program. It is difficult, I think the two most difficult distractions to deal with are the human voice and music. When practicing Zazen. But there's little we can do except hope that it's perhaps more quiet next week. Today I wanted to discuss two items. We are somewhat pressed for time. And the one of the two things I wanted to bring up was a reading from this book, which is a text that is required reading for Wildflower Zendo senior students, as opposed to those who are just passing through. Up to you. But if you're not just passing through, read the damn thing. Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism by Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, and it's put out by the Shambhala Publishing Company in Boston, and it's, I think, part of their Dragon Edition series, and each one has a blue dragon, and it's very nice, isn't it? So, Chapter 1, Spiritual Materialism. We have come here to learn about spirituality. I trust the genuine quality of this search, but we must that ego can convert anything to its own use, even spirituality. Ego is constantly attempting to acquire and apply the teachings of spirituality for its own benefit. The teachings are treated as an external thing, external to me, a philosophy which we try to imitate. We do not actually want to identify with or become the teachings. So if our teacher speaks of renunciation of ego, we attempt to mimic renunciation of ego. We go through the motions, make the appropriate gestures, but we really do not want to sacrifice any part of our way of life. We become skillful actors while playing deaf and dumb to the real meaning of the teachings. We find some comfort in pretending to follow the path. Whenever we begin to feel any discrepancy or conflict between our actions and the teachings, we immediately interpret the situation over. The interpreter is ego in the role of spiritual advisor. The situation is like that of a country where the church and state are separate. If the policy of the state is foreign to the teachings of the church, then the automatic reaction of the king is to go to the head of the church, his spiritual advisor, and ask him for his blessing. The head of the church then works out some justification and gives the policy his blessing. In an individual's mind, it works out very neatly that way. Ego being both king and head of the church. The rationalization of the spiritual path in one's actions must be cut through if true spirituality is to be realized. However, such rationalizing is not easy to deal with because everything is seen through the filters of ego's philosophy and logic, making all appear neat, precise, and very logical. We attempt to find self-justifying answers for every question. In order to reassure ourselves, we work to fit into our intellectual scheme every aspect of our lives, which might be confusing. And our effort is so serious and solemn, so straightforward and sincere, that it is difficult to be suspicious of it. We always trust the integrity of our spiritual advisor. Does not matter what we use to achieve self-justification. The wisdom of the sacred books, diagrams or charts, mathematical calculations, esoteric formulae, fundamentalist religion, depth psychology, or any other mechanism. Whenever we begin to evaluate, deciding that we should or should not do this or that, then we've already associated our practice or our knowledge with categories, one pitted against the other, and that is spiritual materialism, the false spirituality of our spiritual advisor. Whenever we have a dualistic notion such as, I am doing this because I want to achieve a particular state of consciousness, a particular state of being, then automatically we separate ourselves from the reality of what we are. We will get back to more cutting through spiritual materialism. Much of what we are working with here in Wildflower Zendo involves the demystification of Buddhist practice, taking the mystery out of it. And it's not necessarily a fundamentalistic kind of approach, but part of what we are doing is educating ourselves on an intellectual level in addition to doing the practice. So we have at least some smattering of understanding from an intellectual perspective of the doctrine of the Buddhist tradition. Zen and Buddhism are not separate and cannot be separated. When you go into Starbucks, you'll see Zen tea. A while ago, we had Zen cologne. We see in the bookstore Zen and the Art of Selling Books with Zen in the title. Just about every other book is Zen and the Art of something or other. Zen and the Art of Book Selling. And they have nothing to do with Zen. Zen and Buddhism are inseparable. Their fundamental characteristics of Buddhism are essential to the practice of Zen. What is Buddhism? Which recommended reading. And in Buddhism in a nutshell, Narada, the author, defines Buddhism as the non-aggressive moral and philosophical system expounded by the Buddha, which demands no blind faith from its adherents, expounds no dogmatic creeds, encourages no superstitious rites and ceremonies, but advocates a golden mean that guides a disciple through pure living and pure thinking to the gain of supreme vision and deliverance from all evil. It is called Dharma and is popularly known as Buddhism. The roots of Buddhism lie in certain doctrines of which there are three fundamental sets at the root. And these three sets of doctrines are the three more noble truths and the eightfold noble path. Zen is a practice tradition, and as such is a very active and very dynamic tradition. And we are definitely the do-it-yourself, hands-on school of Buddhism. But I think that to a large extent, particularly in the West, we have neglected an understanding of some Buddhist roots in our search for awakening. And I think it's very important that Zen students go back and master some of the basic intellectual concepts that form the core of Buddhist teachings. It's very important here in the West, because Buddhism is a non-Abrahamic tradition, which is unfamiliar to the Western concept of spirituality, and particularly in the Judeo-Christian and Muslim tradition. And Buddhism is very, very different. It is not simply another monotheistic schools of thought coming out of Abraham. And it's that difference that is part of the Eastern culture, that many Eastern teachers, they are so familiar with it that they do not even bother to transmit it to their Western students. And it's incumbent on us as responsible practitioners and mature practitioners to take the time to develop an understanding of some of the fundamental principles of Buddhism. Unfortunately, today we're kind of strapped for time. I did want to at least speak of the core of and the foundation of the Buddhist tradition, and that is primarily the what are called the three basic facts of existence, or the three marks of existence, depending on which school you're approaching them. The three characteristics, the three signata, or the three signs. They're three basic principles. Found in verses 277 to 279 of the Dhammapada, which is a collection of the alleged sayings of the Buddha that was written down some 100 years after his passing. And these verses are as follows. All conditioned things are permanent, transient. All conditioned things are sorrowful, unsatisfactory. All phenomena are without ego, self, substance. The three basic characteristics are referred to as anicca, dukkha. It's a term term that means impermanence, transience, transitoriness, changeability. All things must change, all things must pass. Dukkha refers to the fundamental dissatisfactory nature of existence. In everything within existence, there is essentially dissatisfaction. And this is a matter of experience and a matter of seeing things clearly, and we particularly run into this in terms of our practice. In sitting, doing zazen, we observe the functioning of the mind, and we encounter the dissatisfactory nature of things quite intimately in doing this practice. Finally, the third principle, the anatta principle, and this is the most difficult and the most unique of the principles, involves egolessness, impersonality, non-ego, non-self, unsubstantiable. The Buddhist Dictionary, a manual of terms and doctrine, defines anatta as follows. Anatta, not self, that's the literal meaning. Non-ego, egolessness, impersonality. It is the last of the three characteristics of existence. The anatta doctrine teaches that neither within the body and mental phenomena of existence, nor outside of them, can be found anything that in the ultimate sense could be regarded as a self-existing real ego entity, soul, or any other abiding substance. This is the central doctrine of Buddhism, without understanding which a real knowledge of Buddhism is altogether impossible. It is the only really specific Buddhist doctrine with which the entire structure of the Buddhist teaching stands or falls. All the remaining doctrines may more or less be found in other philosophic systems and religions, but the anatta doctrine has been clearly and unreservedly taught by the Buddha. Wherefore the Buddha is known as the anattavadi, the teacher of impersonality. This is a very, very important principle. And these three marks of existence are the root of Buddhism, the root of Zen practice, without which it is just so much speculation. We are out of time. I do thank every one of you for coming today. Please come back. You're always welcome. Does anyone have any questions or commentary?
Dukkha, life sucks and then you die.
Dukkha, life is fundamental dissatisfactoriness. We do the best we can with it, and we try to do it elegantly, and then we die. It's So we will end informally.